broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, happy to have you along, my fellow Americans, Sam Bushman and Kurt Crosby, live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use. It all starts now. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the broadcast for April the 30th in the year of our Lord, 2018. This is our one of two, and our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio. Now, ladies and gentlemen, let me just be very clear. This is our one of two. Our goal always to stand for peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. And somebody emailed me just recently, and they said, Sam, you know what? Why don't you stand for peaceful revolution? That's what you guys need, is a revolution going on over there. And I don't mean to play games, and I don't mean to get into an argument over semantics with people, but I do want to make something very, very clear. Revolutions are not peaceful. Restorations can be peaceful. And you say, well, Sam, come on, we're just talking semantics, aren't we? And I submit to you, no, we're not. We're talking about the fundamental proper role of government. See, a revolution says, hey, we're going to do whatever it takes to revolt from the system. Right? And a restoration says, hey, we're going to use all the principles in the system to bring it back, to restore. One's restorative, if you will. To bring back. It's kind of like make America great again. That's restoration. Make America great again. It was great before by using the same principles. The checks and balances, the supreme law, we can restore what we once had. Make America great again, right? A revolution says, hey, we're going to throw off the system and we're going to replace it with what we believe it to be better. We're going to revolt. And I don't mean to play games of semantics, but I do mean to kind of highlight the difference. The difference is one of focus. A restoration says we believe in the framework and we're going to use the laws of the land to return to it. A revolution says, hey, we're going to get together and we're going to reject what we have and replace it with something else. The problem is, what is that something else? And that's why I reject a constitutional convention as well, because I don't know what that something else entails, right? I might believe it to be something. Hey, we're just going to, you know, put the national debt in line. We're going to make sure the national debt gets fixed. Or I might have my limited view. Somebody else might say, no. We intend to throw out the old and embrace the new completely. Well, what does that mean? See, a constitutional convention, a revolution, the same thing with a secession. The secession says we're going to leave the United States of America, and we might come back based on what's replaced or what comes in its place. A restoration says, wait a minute, all those are a bridge too far. All those ideas are less than honorable. Because even those who might believe in doing what's right very well could be circumvented by those who don't want what's right. In other words, it's very easy in a revolution for the majority to be on the altar of the loudmouthed minority. The minority with the force, somebody who gets gain over another. Okay, one of the great brilliant pieces of America is it respects the majority. That's kind of the democratic portion. But it does so via checks and balances in the rule of law, a moral republic. Republics don't revolt. Republics don't reject what they have. They just slowly but surely, incrementally improve on it. One is for a moral people. The other is for, I don't know who. It depends on who gets in charge. A vacuum of power is created, and it depends on who shanghais it, if you will. Without further ado, Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org. Welcome back to Liberty Roundtable Live.
Thanks for having me, gentlemen. It's good to be with you.
I don't know if you got the whole context, but somebody emailed me and Sam, what you need is a peaceful revolution. And I said, I don't mean to play games with semantics, but a peaceful revolution, there's no such thing. Because you don't know what a revolution entails. That's why I really don't mean to play games with words, but I want to really reiterate, we reject revolution. It means constitutional convention, throw it all out and start over possibly. You don't know what it means. Or it means secession, you know, reject the United States and maybe join what's to follow, depending on. It's violent. It's burn the barn down, extreme. It's, okay, I don't support a con. I don't support a revolution. I don't support a secession. Because I want to stick with what we know to work. I want to stick with the framework of what's successful. I just want to use the checks and balances peacefully to restore. I want a constitutional republic. I want a moral people to use representation and the checks and balances to make America great. One tends to gravitate towards the appropriate law-abiding balance of power. The other takes off the gloves and says, we don't know what we'll get, but it's got to be better than what we've got. I say that's a foolish, chancy idea that rarely turns out well. In fact, I can only think of one time in history when it has. What do you think, Lola? Am I playing games with words, or is there a point to be made here, sir?
Well, you're spot on there, I think. The definition of revolution is the key definition, obviously. We don't know what revolution means unless you take this pains and the time, which you have done in the last 5 minutes, to explain what you mean when you talk about a peaceful restoration of the republic. I mean, if that's what he means by revolution, a peaceful revolution, then fantastic. But
the problem is, though, when you go down that revolutionary path, you tend to unite with those who may or may not share your definition.
Exactly. That's why it has to be so clearly delineated, which you have done.
The other problem that I think with revolution ideas, even if you mean the right term, it's a very trigger-oriented word. It's a very... I don't know what you want to say, standoffish, misinterpreted. A restoration is very hard to misinterpret, right?
That's right. And in fact, there's another definition of the word revolution, or another use of the word revolution, which preceded the Revolutionary War, which was a violent revolution of 1770s, obviously, and that was the revolution of thought that occurred 20 to 40 years earlier than the violent revolution. And that was simply a revolution of ideas, meaning, you know, new ideas being spread abroad in the colonies, such that it enabled, you know, the founders of this country to put together their thoughts, their ideas about government, and to hammer them into a Declaration of Independence. They were justified in doing so, and then to eventually hammer those thoughts, the proper role of government, into the Constitution, a divinely inspired document, which, if we would follow today, would solve every problem we have. Every major problem we have, Sam, today can be solved by resorting to the originalist definition of the Constitution.
And that's why, again, even if we take the pre-revolutionary violent days and look at revolutionary thought, everybody wants to write a new plan for America. You know what? Everybody wants to write a book. If we just do this, if we just do that, it's everything but the framework, which has a track record. And that's, again, why I reject this revolutionary word, because it suggests that we don't have the solution yet, but new thought can bring it about. And I reject that as well.
Well, and we need to uncover old thought, which is being covered up by lamestream media and our public education system today. And that old thought is exactly what Jefferson and Madison described in the resolve of 99, about both 98 and 99, where states were, they have a duty. States have a duty, a sovereign duty, to erect barriers against encroachment of the federal authority, of the central government.
And the reason I bring that up is almost 20 years ago, 19 years ago, Ron Paul gave an incredible speech on the House floor. It was an incredible speech. It's almost 20 years old now, but it was a look back in history to our founding fathers. It was an understanding of that new thought then, old thought now, brought forward in a solutionary, is that a word, solutionary? A solution-oriented, epic Ron Paul speech like no other. Lowell?
Absolutely, Sam. He was. This speech came in the wake of the Columbine High School shooting, whereby, 12 students and one teacher at the Columbine High School there in Jefferson County, Colorado, were killed by their classmates Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold. And that event sparked a firestorm of discussion, Sam, about all kinds of things. Pharmaceutical antidepressants used by teenagers, violence in video games, gun control laws, just a half a dozen more various topics. And these are topics that, they're symptomatic of a much, much deeper problem. And Ron was able to tease the deeper problem out of the melee, so to speak. He talked about the real causes of gun violence. and the link between a free society and a just and moral society, basically saying if you if we do not have just and moral people in society, then we cannot be free. We cannot enjoy the liberty that was vouchsafed to us by the founders and the framers. His speech 19 years ago is just as relevant today as it was, you know, almost 20 years ago.
And it was really, even then, it was a point back to the founding father-esque solutions. Only a moral society will make our citizens and their guns less violent. It was a clear direction towards the founding fathers' revolutionary then thoughts, which could be restorative in nature today. Ron was attempting to restore that vision, that viewpoint, that understanding that our founding fathers gained a couple of hundred years ago.
Absolutely, Sam. The unfortunate thing back there in Congress, of course, you've got one or two or three speakers there, and basically they address an empty hall. And, you know, but the good news of that is that his speeches have been compiled. They've been aggregated into several books and compiled and then published. And so we have the benefit of his wisdom going forward today. And that's a great reason to talk about it here this morning, Sam, is to refresh in our minds the vital force of the Constitution.
The details in seconds from Lil Nelson, campaignforliberty.org, will break down exactly why we reject revolution but stand for peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. Hang tight, folks.
Scott Bradley here. Most Americans are painfully aware that the nation is on the wrong track and in dire straits. Unfortunately, most political pundits only nibble around the edges when they claim to address the issues. Even worse, many of the so-called solutions are simply rewarmed servings of what got us into the mess we currently face. And the politicians think we're so gullible and naive that we'll buy their lies that they have reformed and now understand where they led us astray. Unfortunately, the truth of the matter is that they simply wish to continue to hold power. The solution to America's challenges is found in returning to the timeless principles found in the United States Constitution. My book and lecture series will reawaken in Americans an understanding and love of the principles which made this nation the freest, most prosperous, happiest, and most respected nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com and order my book and lectures to begin the restoration of this great nation.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
With news the networks refuse to use, you are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
Ron Paul, back in 1999, gave an epic speech on the floor of Congress. Of course, it was an empty hall, and people don't even remember the speech, but it was a look back at the founder-esque solutions for these problems. And he pointed out that, you know what? As the founding fathers said, what do you have? You have a republic if you can keep it. And they meant, hey, this government that we have is only made for a moral people. It will not work in any other setting. Ron Paul echoes that forward in history on the House floor, and it's well documented, but nobody pays attention. The details start now, Lowell.
Sam, he says, he begins his speech by saying, look, guys, we're going to be talking about school violence this whole week. And then he says, Mr. Speaker, if we had remained a constitutional republic, boy,
Now think about that kind of a statement. He's really talking about how much we've lost. And the way we get it back is to use the restorative process, the restorative process, to bring back what we once had. We already have the blueprint, is the point. And if we set aside that blueprint and look elsewhere, we make a huge mistake. Why? Because we're setting aside something that we have proven over a couple of 100 years that works, that creates the best economic engine in the world, that creates the freest people with the most limited government, with the checks and balances that make America like no other. The grand old experiment the founding fathers embarked on, proven successful. Why look forward with a different solution than what we know works, with something that we have no track record with? It makes no sense if you're a logical thinking person with a desire for solutions. It makes no sense to look elsewhere. Is the point, Lowell?
Exactly right, Sam. That question again, if we had remained a constitutional republic, obviously implies that he believes, and I would agree, that we have not remained a constitutional republic. And so you ask yourselves, what's up with that? I mean, why don't you think we're a constitutional republic, right? Well, he goes on to indicate one of the key elements of a constitutional republic from which we have moved. He says, for the violence that did occur, he says, this kind of violence would be greatly reduced, and it would be if it were dealt with as a local and a school issue, right? Responding emotionally with feel-good legislation in Congress serves no worthwhile purpose, but, of course, makes the politician feel like he is doing something beneficial. And so he right away, he's pointing out that, you know, the federal government has no authority, no warrant in the Constitution to delve into domestic issues such as schooling and education. Many, many other issues they should not be involved with. But because of that intervention, they have created a situation where we have violence in the school setting. And he says that would not have happened had we remained a constitutional republic. In other words, if the feds stayed out of schooling, stayed out of education, and allowed the states to deal with that very domestic issue on their own. And states are to blame here, too, by the way. I'm not just blaming the federal government. The states are to blame because they acquiesce. They give up their power, their authority. They don't understand their authority, and so they just give it up, and they say, well, let's look to the federal government for a solution to our problems.
And that's why looking to the checks and balances, that's why looking to the checks and balances that made America great is the great answer. And everybody tells me we've tried everything, but we're a failure, Sam. Well, we need to return morality in the people through repentance. If we do, God, biblically speaking, says he will forgive us and heal our land. He will protect us as well. That statement, biblically speaking, is so incredibly important. And then we also realize the checks and balances divide up power. And then that way, hey, we the people have a lot of authority. The Congress has a lot of authority. The checks and balances are in place. It protects us all, this check and balance. And we dismiss all that and act like there was nothing there in the first place. That's the big lie told.
Right, Sam. He goes on to say gun laws do not work, and more of them only attack the liberties of law-abiding citizens. Then reaching back to a little bit to history, he points out that before the first federal gun law in 1934, there was a lot less gun violence, and yet guns were readily accessible to everyone, everywhere. However, he says, let me remind my colleagues that under the Constitution, gun regulations and crime control are supposed to be state issues. There again, that's a reprise of his theme that the federal government doesn't have authority to deal with domestic issues such as education and gun violence and crime control. Those are supposed to be state issues.
And the reason why is because constitutionally, that authority, that responsibility was never delegated, ladies and gentlemen. Understand that principle.
And the states, did not delegate that authority. They retained it to themselves and to the people, and what has happened is that over the years, the states have failed to step up to address these problems themselves, right? And so it's both the problem, you know, we're responsible, folks. You and I, we are the ones. We have to take responsibility for our situation, and we need to engage our neighbors and so forth. But Sam's exactly right. We need a moral and a virtuous people. We need the state involvement in these domestic issues. We don't want federal involvement in these issues.
And restoring a check and balance that's been forgotten is key for the proper role of limited government. Restoring morality to the people is the answer, points out Ron Paul 19 years ago, and it's the exact reality check the Founding Fathers pointed out back in the day. There's nothing different. The solution's been in front of us the whole time, ladies and gentlemen.
And then he gets into some very interesting observations. 9 observations, Sam. Let's go through them, 1 through 9. Number 1, private schools are much safer than public schools. Number 2, public school violence has increased since the federal government took it over, right?
And has increased the more we try to regulate guns and pretend that that replaces morality. Go ahead.
Yeah, and the biggest thing there is that federal law makes school zones gun-free zones, which makes them safe for criminals and enables the slaughter of our children. That's what it does. The federal government is enabling the slaughter of our children by making school zones gun-free, criminal-safe zones.
I'm going to agree with you, but when you say enabling, I'm going to say mandating, because it's by law, sir.
Yeah, you're right.
By
you're
force
right, exactly.
is the problem. By force do the good guys not have guns. Wow.
Exactly. Number 3, discipline is difficult in the schools due to the rules, regulations, and threats of lawsuits as a consequence of federal government involvement in public education. You don't have these problems in private schools. Sam, you and I both know that. The private schools, the home schools, and so forth, you attend those schools and send your children to those schools because you know that they have discipline in the schools and that students are there. They want to be there. They enjoy being there. The environment is a academic environment where they can study and where initiative is fostered and discipline is encouraged and rewarded. I mean, so many, many wonderful things happen in private school and home school settings that do not happen in a public government school setting because it's forced, it's basically mandated by the government.
Well, compulsory education is the 10th plank of the Communist Manifesto, not anywhere found in the supreme law of the land, the Constitutional Republic's Constitution. That should make it clear enough. But bottom line, the Republicans have been promising to shut down federal government education. Now they have the ability, and I haven't heard a single word about it.
Right. Number 4, reading about violence throughout history has not been a cause of violence. That points to the fact, Sam, that a lot of history courses today don't talk about violence.
In fact, reading about it makes the folks want to avoid it because they understand how evil the context really is.
Exactly. Number 5, lack of gun laws has not been a cause of violence. We've covered that. Number 6, the government's practice of using violence to achieve social goods condones its use. All government welfare is based on the threat of government violence. And so here we get into his point, Sam, where the government use of violence is being imitated by citizens. I mean, that's incredible observation. He talks about number 7, Star Wars technology casually displayed on our TV screens showing blowing up of bridges and trains and sewer plants and embassies, all in the name of humanitarianism, glibly sanctions violence as a proper tool for bringing about change. Violence is not the way we should bring about change, and yet that's what we display in movies and on the big screen and so forth. Number 8, the federal government's role in Waco and the burning alive of innocent children in the name of doing good, it sends a confusing message to our youth, right? Here's again, the federal government intervention is setting a bad example for the citizenry. And number 9, government's role in defending and even paying to kill a half-born child cannot but send a powerful message to our young people that life is cheap, both that of the victims and the perpetrators of violence.
I'm telling you right now, an epic floor speech turned into a column or an article available for you folks. It's all in text. You can read it. You can understand it. A look back at the Founding Fathers for solutions echoed in the House on the House floor 19 years ago, brought forward today as an answer, a solution to the problems we face. Lowell Nelson in seconds.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today.
We fought, we learned, we struggled,
we won.
Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
Every day I wake up, it's almost like a battle. It's like, well, you know, I could do this today. I could go get drunk.
I don't like beer. I'm an alcoholic because I can't, you know, stop drinking because it alters my mind, but I don't like alcohol.
And I had to keep telling myself that, you know, this is okay. Everybody does this. My whole life was just a big lie.
I can't control if I do take that drink because I'm an addict and I can't.
I admit, it's messed me up.
I don't have a very good memory. I have a hard time remembering things when I learn them.
I can't concentrate on one thing for more than 5 or 10 minutes. You have fun until you hit rock bottom and it's not fun anymore.
I remember sitting in assemblies about drugs and I thought, that's never going to happen to me. I'm never going to be like those kids. But here I am.
The choices that you make are choices you're going to have to live with.
A public service message from The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Promoting God, family, and country. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Radio.
All right, any more quick key points from this epic speech that Ron Paul gave 19 years ago on the House floor, Lowell?
You can find it at ronpaulinstitute.org. You can find it at in the Congressional Record of 1999. You can also find it at campaignforliberty.org.
It doesn't get better than that, ladies and gentlemen. And that reality check, and this is what's interesting, is nobody makes a tie between the government creating violence in our society by their actions, by regulating and shutting down the innocents in America, by literally creating gun-free zones, allowing criminals protection while disarming the good guys. We have a different view around the world, sadly to say. We arm the bad guys. We do it all the time. We create incidents, if you will, to deceive the people via the media into backing more and more and more violence around the world. We arm, train, and fund the enemies of liberty everywhere around the world. And, for example, Rand Paul has been saying lately that we spend $50 billion annually on the war in Afghanistan. Senator Rand Paul's repeatedly claimed this, $50 billion annually on the war in Afghanistan. By the way, even the liberals didn't think he was right, but they dug into it and found out the numbers back up Rand Paul. So we've got these false flag operations that create the deceptive realities for Americans. So we disarm the good guys in America and claim that all we got to do is have less guns. But then we arm and train and fund the bad guys around the world. And oftentimes, as a pretext to get it done, we jump into the false flag business. Lol.
Well, that's exactly why we need to talk about false flag and give it a good definition. You know, even as recently as 5 or 10 years ago, I was not really up to speed on what false flag meant. And over the past 5 years, I've really, you know, come to realize that governments use false flag operations in order to achieve their desired ends. And they do it routinely, Sam. It was actually, you know, back in the Greeks and Romans, they were using it back then. A military force, they'd pretend to be friendly, they'd get close to an enemy, then they would drop the pretense, raise their real banners, and attack, launch an attack on their enemy. In the sea battles on the oceans, in the 1700s, Spain, France, and England, of course, they would sail under their enemy's flag to get close enough to them, and then they would hoist their own colors and before, you know, begin shooting cannons at their enemies. And it was considered honorable as long as they reverted to their own country's flag before firing the first shot. Well, today, these false flag operations are generally carried out by the intelligence agencies of the various governments. And those intelligence agencies often employ non-governmental actors, such as terrorists, to do their dirty work for them. And
because that way they don't have to claim it. That way they don't have to raise their own colors before firing in the first shot. They've found a way to avoid all that, blame it on a third party, and never have the tie back directly to them.
Right, and they have what they call plausible deniability, meaning that it's actually plausible. They believe it. They do it in such a way that they can deny any involvement with such and such terrorist or organization that conducted this terrible atrocity. So you know, this article goes hand in hand with the next article. Two articles that we'll be discussing, which is Syria. I mean, that's probably the most recent and false flag operation that has happened, where, you know, some terrorist group comes in and they explode some bombs or whatever, and then they blame it on Assad. The White Helmets in Syria, of course, are the ones who have been doing this in Syria. We'll get to that in just a second, but We should finish about the false flag. We got the CIA. They do it here for the United States. And in fact, Sam, the CIA now has the capability to mimic the internet fingerprints of other foreign intelligence services. So the CIA can make it look
like the Russians tampering with the elections for maybe examples or what?
Exactly. That's right, Sam. They can make it look like the Russians were the ones who tampered with our elections. They can make it look like the UK, you know, did this or did that, or that Iran did this or did that, because they can tweak. You know, I'm into software. I'm a programmer, and so this is very, very credible. What they can do, they can make it look like someone else did the job just by changing the electronic fingerprint of the operation. So that's why false flags today are so common, because it's so easy with the mass media that you can spin up a false flag operation and make it look like somebody else is the real bad guy, when in actuality they're not the bad guy at all. You know, we did this with Cuba, right? I mean, they actually considered the chief of staff actually considered a false flag operation attack on American soil, make it look like the Cubans did it, to give us an excuse to go to war with Cuba. And Kennedy nixed that idea, fortunately. But that's the type of pernicious scheming that goes on in governments around the world to engage in war. So the remedy against false flag operations, such as the recent one in Syria, of course, is to avoid taking the bait. And instead, we should wait until a thorough, objective inspection of the evidence has taken place. Exactly. exactly what did not happen in Syria.
We should also look to the checks and balances of the Constitution. The Trumpsters should be looking at Congress for guidance and funding and direction and accountability and permission, if you will, via the checks and balances in America. But instead, he went to foreign nations for his guidance, and he rejected his own Congress.
Yeah, it's crazy the way they just can't seem to read and follow the Constitution. Of course, they don't want to, because the war effort, you know, launching 150 missiles at Syria cost about, you know, well over $1 billion. I think it was like $100 billion, right?
Well, the U.S. spends $50 billion annually on the war in Afghanistan alone.
Yeah, and so that's a big moneymaker for the defense contractors, the military-industrial complex. That's the reason we're in these perpetual wars, and one of the reasons, it's not the only reason, but one of the main reasons for these perpetual wars and these false flag operations to get us into more war is so that these military-industrial corporations, the defense contractors, and so forth, can continue to sell their products and services to the government, which is spending, you know, more than the next six countries combined. In this war effort, this interventionist war effort. So that's why I talk about it so much, Sam, because we need more people hammering their U.S. Members of Congress to stop doing this, to get us out of the war, to stop going to war, to rein in the president and quit, you know, bombing people. This is just not the way to go, Sam.
But just as this epic speech that Ron Paul gave in 99 about the problems internally and the truth on the ground internationally is told quite a bit as well. No attacks, no victims is one of the articles that highlights the truth on this. The evidence is overwhelming, sir.
That's right, Sam. The Russian officials, they brought 15 people to The Hague from the city of Douma, Syria, who apparently were there during the April 7th chemical attack, the so-called chemical attack. And one of those 15 people was this 11-year-old Hassan Diab, who was the very child, the little student who was seen in a widely distributed video taken by the White Helmets, this NGO organization known as the White Helmets. They filmed themselves giving Diab emergency treatment, the so-called emergency treatment after the so-called chemical attack. Well, and so here's Diab saying, look, we were in the basement. We heard people shouting that we needed to get up and get into the hospital. So we went through a tunnel up into the hospital, and we got into the hospital, and they started pouring cold water on me. And, of course, you've all seen the video of that where, you know, medical community is just pouring water over everybody, you know, so apparently to wash off the chemicals so that they weren't adversely affected by the chemicals. Well, there wasn't any chemicals involved. Diab was featured in the video and says, obviously, it was staged. The boy and his family, they spoke in various media outlets, and they say there was no attack. Now, this isn't the only reason why we can believe that there was not an attack. This is a false flag event spun up by the White Helmets and their hands.
And by the way, the White Helmets are who we are funding right now, ladies and gentlemen. And that's why I say we fund, train, and arm the terrorists and the false flags everywhere we go. And then we wonder why we have such violence in the world. We disarm the good guys at home and wonder why we have violence at home. Wow. Lowell Nelson breaks it down in seconds. Campaign for Liberty. .org on your radio. Are you familiar with the term vigor? Strength in body and mind? He pursued his tennis game with vigor, for example? Well, I hadn't, but I learned about it from Kirk Crosby. All right, and he actually let me take a scientifically proven free vigor test. And I got 13 out of 32, not very good. But I worked on it with him, and believe it or not, now I have a 29 out of 32 and improving vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is this scientific vigor score, huh? My response is you got to take the free test available now. Get a hold of Kirk Crosby to learn about it. The number's 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Or email Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com for your free vigor test today. Kurt, LibertyRoundtable.com, or 801-669-2211. Vigor test, free, scientifically proven today.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Begging politicians, bureaucrats, and educrats, and all do-gooders to please obey the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. This is Liberty Roundtable.
We're documenting false flags. We're documenting how we arm, train, and fund the enemy. We do it all the time, folks. You don't know history. You got to study. You got to learn. RonPaulInstitute.org and CampaignForLiberty.org are two of the greatest sites to help you get that done as you educate yourself and share the word with others. Epic Ron Paul speech. Only a moral society will make our citizens and their guns less violent. And only an honest, moral society, replete with the checks and balances given to us by blood, sweat, tears, their very lives, and their sacred honor and fortunes by the founders, are the answer, ladies and gentlemen. The U.S. spends over $50 billion annually on the war in Afghanistan alone, documents Rand Paul. And the mainstream press tried to fact check him, and they came back and said, well, the numbers do back up the good senator. False flag operations are live and well and have been so for generations, ladies and gentlemen, and it happens by the United States internally and externally. No attacks, no victims is the article we're talking about now. No chemical attacks took place, but yet we want to pretend they have. Donald Trump was against these wars till he became president. Now he's, as Pat Buchanan said, kind of a prisoner of the war military-industrial complex. He's already attacked, what, Syria twice now, Lol?
That's right, Sam. Fortunately, the first attack, he just attacked an empty airfield in Syria, launched, I think it was 59 missiles, cruise missiles, into an empty airfield. So he didn't really hurt anybody, and so I'm glad of that.
But he destroyed property.
Yep.
And he now wants to nation build and fund the fixing of the damage done. So this is what I mean by we train, arm, and fund the enemies. Why are we, one, destroying their property, and number two, why are we then paying to fix it? Anyway, I digress. But the bottom line is there was no attack, and there's no real evidence. This is really up in the air. Even our own government has to admit that they don't have the attacks documented, right?
Well, that's right. In fact, on the eve of the attack was when the inspectors were going into Syria to investigate. But before they got there, the attack was launched, so that they destroyed most of the evidence of a chemical attack, if there was one that actually occurred. But as we know, there wasn't a chemical attack, and the inspectors, they could have verified that had they been allowed to go in the very next day. They were on their way. They were there, and the very next day they would have been there to begin the inspection. It would have taken a few days, obviously, a week or two maybe. And then they could have verified whether or not truly there was a chemical attack. But,
and there's a question in the next article that highlights this. Did you really drop bombs on a chemical weapons facility, Mrs. May?
Right, because they brought the British Prime Minister in and they put some heat on her and said, look, if there really were chemical weapons at this facility and you bombed it, how irresponsible is that? Because it would have had horrendous consequences for the people near those locations. If, for example, sarin gas had been there, and then you bomb the facility where sarin gas is contained, it's going to to go everywhere, right? The sarin gas, it doesn't just...
In other words, you're going to be the one, the person that dropped the bomb is going to be the one to gas the people, right?
Exactly. Basically, it's a dispersal mechanism. The bomb explodes the facility and disperses the gas into the outlying areas, surrounding areas, and that there alone would do the damage to thousands and thousands of people. And so they're calling her on the carpet for that, and I'm glad they did. Because on one hand, if you're going to bomb a chemical weapons facility, that is irresponsible because of the threat or the potential hazard that poses.
Not only is it irresponsible, but it becomes terroristic to violate somebody else's airspace, to breach their sovereignty, to then blow up a chemical weapons plant and release those chemicals. It becomes bordering on terrorism.
Exactly. And then on the other hand, if there were not chemical weapons there, then he's deliberately misleading the people, because that was what everybody was saying before the attacks. Well, the chemical weapons, you know, were used here, and then for them to, you know, bomb the area, if they knew that there were no chemical weapons there, that they were deliberately lying to us, the American people, and the people in the UK, and the people in France. Because it's France, the UK, and the United States that coordinated this effort to bomb this munitions or this place there in Syria. So,
but it's interesting to me, like 9/11, we had to say there were weapons there, mass destruction. We lied, went in, never found them after the fact. Now this time, we claim that there's not the attacks going on that they claim. Before we can send in investigators to find out the truth on the international stage, we literally go in and irresponsibly bomb the plant, releasing the gas, or if the gas was never there, we lied. Either way, history repeats itself, and we're seeing this over and over and over again. Now, I mentioned to you that we arm, train, and fund the enemy. We also defend doing so. In the mainstream press, Rand Paul had an opportunity to speak with who? Wolf Blitzer? Right?
Yeah, this was a couple of years ago, but this clip of Wolf Blitzer and Rand Paul illustrates that they value the contracts with their military-industrial complex corporations more than they value life.
Listen to the epic discussion between the two, the mainstream press deceiver and the honest senator.
Into law, he would presumably veto it.
At the very least, it begins the debate of whether or not we should be at war. We are refueling the Saudi bombers, so we are essentially part of the bombing campaign.
We are refueling the Saudi bombers. You see, I said we armed, trained, and funded our enemies. Listen carefully.
We're helping them choose targets, and we are refueling the Saudi bombers that are dropping the bombs. It is said that thousands of civilians have died in Yemen because of this. Yes, we need to have a debate over this, and I don't know what the president will do, but he ought to come to Congress and ask for permission. We've given him no authority to get involved in the civil war in Yemen, and we have to ask the bigger question, is this making it better or worse? Are there more refugees or less? Geez, is there more chaos or less chaos with Saudi Arabia bombing into Yemen? So, yeah, it's a debate we ought to have, and no president should unilaterally have this authority without the approval of Congress.
So for you, this is a moral issue, because you know there's a lot of jobs at stake, sir.
So what's interesting, they say for you, as if it's not a moral issue for anybody else, just for kind of a whacked-out senator that's kind of offbeat with the rest of them. See how they marginalize him? It's wrong, folks.
If a lot of these defense contractors stop selling warplanes, other sophisticated equipment to Saudi Arabia, there's going to be a significant loss of jobs and revenue here in the United States. That's secondary from your standpoint.
So hold on. Wow, we're going to talk about jobs? When we violate the sovereignty of nations and fund and train and arm the enemies?
Well, not only is it a moral question, it's a constitutional question. Our founding fathers very directly and specifically did not give the president the power to go to war. They gave it to Congress. So Congress needs to step up, and this is what I'm doing, stepping up and asserting our authority over foreign policy, and that we need to be involved. We should not be in after the fact, oh, we'll give you a consultation. No, we should be directing the president whether he has the power to do this or not. And I do not believe he has the constitutional power to do it, nor do I think it is wise. I think we are elevating an arms race in the Middle East, and I don't think it's good for America. And I think to have millions of new refugees. Look, Saudi Arabia hadn't taken any refugees. They were part of the violence in Syria. Many of the weapons that Saudi Arabia and Qatar set into the Syrian civil war, some of those wound up in the hands of Al-Qaeda and ISIS. And then refugees are streaming across the world. And right. Saudi Arabia foments this but didn't take any of the refugees.
Wow. So we're getting back into, we won't have jobs if we don't fund terrorists, arm and train them, is the bottom line from Wolf Blitzer. It's almost a blitzkrieg against the sovereignty and the stability of the United States, sir.
Well, and it shows that he doesn't value the lives of people around the world equally. The jobs here in America are more important to him than the lives of the people in Yemen who are being bombed and killed and maimed, and that is sick, Sam. That is, I don't understand where he comes, where I don't understand that perspective, because all life is valuable. All life is precious. I don't care if you live in Yemen or in Saudi Arabia or the United States. All life is precious and ought to be protected. That's what God's, that's part of God's plan for his children. Vouchsafed in the Declaration of Independence, the right to life, liberty, and property. Don't we think it's just as important for the people in Yemen and Afghanistan and Iraq and Iran as it is for us here in America? That's my question, Sam. And Wolf Blitzer, I don't understand where he's coming from, because he apparently doesn't value their lives over there as much as he does jobs here in America.
Amen to that. It's very clear, but he's fallen for the lie. Poor Wolf doesn't really understand the reality and the ramifications. He's merely parroting a talking point. That's why we got to have the new media take center stage, to say the least. Now, we also have an article that documents exactly how neocons destroyed a chance for peace with Iran right after 9/11.
This is a great piece, Dan, because I had forgotten this piece of history. We were once allies with Iran. That's the bottom line, Sam. And following the 9/11 attacks, in 2001, the Iranian government, they came out and condemned the attacks, and their citizens in Iran, they took to the streets with candles to remember the victims, just like we did here. They were commiserating with us. They were, bearing our burdens, so to speak. And then the Iranian government, they even offered military assistance to the United States in our efforts against Afghanistan and Al-Qaeda. They were helping us and extending their help to us. And so we actually were military allies for a brief few months there. But then what happened? Well, George Bush gave a speech, the State of the Union address, in 2002, and that speech was written by the neocons. And the neocons basically remember this. I remember this very clear, that they've mentioned three nations on the earth that were known as the Axis of Evil. And if you remember, Sam, the three nations that Bush named in his speech were North Korea, Iran was one of them. What was the third one? I can't remember. Anyway, the Axis of Evil. Iran was named as one of the three countries in that axis of evil, and basically slammed the door on Iran, who was trying to help us find the perpetrators of the 9/11 scene of the damage of 9/11. And so it's just incredible to me that we slammed the door on them, and ever since, Sam, we have been trying to give Iran a bad deal. Who are the biggest losers? Well, the biggest losers are both Iran and the United States, because we don't trade with them. We sanction them, we embargo them, and it's just wrong. We had an opportunity to work with Iran, continue to be their friends, and instead the neocons in charge in this country slammed the door on them and said, no way, we want to fight, we don't want peace.
And Ron Paul, former congressman of Texas, well documents the CIA codified principle of blowback, which is what we're seeing, and we are rejecting peace on the altar of war over jobs and money. It's a tragedy, ladies and gentlemen. It's got to stop, and we're here to bring you the news the networks refuse to use. Why? Because the truth shall set you free. Thank you, Lowell.
You're welcome, gentlemen.
Incredible broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for being alongside for the ride. If you want to keep up with what Lowell's doing, campaignforliberty.org, RonPaulInstitute.org. We declare this nation shall endure.